Rage 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. The fate of the $95 billion foreign aid package the House passed on Saturday now lies with the Senate. The Republican chair of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, Michael McCaul of Texas, tells ABC's This Week it was an important step for Congress.
The eyes of the world are watching, and our adversaries are watching, and history is watching. And that's what I kept telling my colleagues. Do you want to be a Chamberlain or a Churchill? Because that is the moment in time that we are at.
It includes $61 billion in aid for Ukraine, $26 billion for Israel. Today, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said he would fight any effort to sanction the Israeli military as the State Department weighs possible sanctions against IDF units that are accused of civil rights violations. Opening statements in former President Trump's criminal hush money trial begin tomorrow in New York. He has pleaded not guilty. This is ABC News. A second former law enforcement officer in Arkansas has pleaded guilty to civil rights violations stemming from a 2022 arrest that was caught on video and shared widely. Former Crawford County Deputy Levi White changed his plea Friday at a federal hearing. A trial had been scheduled for next month. Meanwhile, police in Michigan say a suspected drunk driver plowed into a building that was hosting a children's birthday party on Saturday in Berlin Township. An 8-year-old girl and her 5-year-old brother were killed.
Police say
the scene was described by the first responders as extremely chaotic, with high level of emotions of those directly involved and those who witnessed this horrific incident.
Monroe County Sheriff Troy Goodenough, he said 9 people were seriously hurt and they suffered life-threatening injuries. The driver, a 66-year-old woman's in custody and under arrest. I'm Brian Clark, ABC News.
Hey, Wisconsin, it's construction season and the Wisconsin DOT wants to help you safely navigate work zones in your area. Check 511WI.gov or download the free 511 app to see current road work, closures, detours, and camera views on your route. Wherever your travels take you, know before you go with 511WI.gov. That's 511WI.gov. And remember, know before you go. Always park the phone while driving. Sponsored by the Wisconsin DOT.
Looking for a roundup of the day's important headlines in quick podcast format? Search no more. Find it now on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com. Your news just for the Superior area. I'm James Kelly with WBZH News.
Well, hi there. It's the fabulous Farm Bay Pam Yonke bringing you the Midwest Farm Report live weekday mornings right here on WBZH. It's not just for farmers. It's for anybody that loves food. Tune in 5 a.m. on the Buzz of the North, 910 a.m. Hayward.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
This is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Federal incentives are helping pay for new renewable energy projects in Wisconsin. Here's Mike Moan with more.
Stane County is no stranger to embracing clean energy, but federal aid from policies like the Inflation Reduction Act and bipartisan infrastructure law spurring more activity. County Executive Joe Parisi says there have been past government credits for things like solar installations, but he adds the latest approach is more expansive.
Everybody, a business, a nonprofit, a church, a temple, even a government and a local government gets 30% back on renewable energy projects.
For example, a local construction company put solar arrays on several of its facilities. He says the new credits speed up the pace of reimbursements, creating more energy savings in the near future. Federal officials say demand has been strong for programs offering the aid, but Parisi says one challenge is creating broader awareness so that under-resourced areas can apply. Beyond clean energy, Parisi says the federal government's push for more made-in-America manufacturing creates opportunities for local plants and regional economies.
There's money available to help retooling to manufacture, and then there's a stronger market for those components now because they are made in America.
National polling shows Americans are greatly concerned about things like inflation, but Parisi says these long-term investments stand to help reduce operating expenses for government agencies and businesses, hopefully keeping local taxes in check while providing savings for consumers. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Frigid conditions early. We'll see sunny to mostly sunny skies and breezy west to northwest winds with highs in the mid and upper 50s. In the overnight, quite chilly once again with mostly clear skies. Lows bottoming out in the upper 20s to lower 30s. It's 57 at our studios.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next show, we celebrate a famous Wisconsin tradition. You guessed it. Polka music. And Wisconsinology's Frank Anderson joins the show.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights 7 till 9. You're listening to The Buzz of the North. 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin.
For all of Wisconsin.
Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Kicking off this week's Civic Media Spotlight, we head to Busted Pencils for a segment from the Educators Amplified discussing materials in the classroom.
This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Welcome Wednesday night, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Wednesday night, educators amplified in the house.
Oh, yeah.
Johnny, there they are. Teacher Joanna, Teacher Hallie back in doing some, you know, radio talking about things that are happening. Speaking of, though, how are you? We haven't seen you since last week. Teacher Hallie, Teacher Joanna, what's going on in your worlds?
What is going on? I've been extremely busy. We are now in, you know, it's after spring break. So in school world, now it's like, rush and get everything done that we said we were going to get done. I'm feeling that. I'm feeling the rush, but very appreciative for the bit of energy I'm feeling with the longer days.
Teacher Hallie.
Oh, I'm coming off just right now off a phone call with, you know, I'm the president of a local union. And so they're in the works of negotiations, right? For salary and stuff. And so it's just interesting to hear, you know, the thoughts of working with district administration, the teacher perspective, and then right, the like sadness and like this teacher was like, we've never received cost of living increase since Act 10. So since 2011, they haven't received a cost of living salary increase, you know? And so you just kind of sit in like, wow, you know? And so right, people are fighting the good fight out here, and I'm happy to
no cost of living increase, and what, that's over 10 years now since Act 10, and today we get the report that inflation is back up again. Oh man, I know. Though, Teacher Joanne, I was wondering though, when that kind of potential rush, because knowing this, the season that we're coming into or we're in, say after spring break, kind of there's this sense, isn't this the kind of like, you know, this is where the rubber starts to meet the road here, teachers and kids, man, because we got lots and lots of testing to do. And is this starting for you guys?
Yeah, I was, you know what?
I'm sorry to bring you down.
No,
I bring you down.
It's the truth. And that's where we're at. Yeah, we're in testing season. And right. So even I think it was last week was the first week back after break here. And I'm going to tell you, pre-COVID, coming back from break, it was usually kind of quiet the first couple days coming back from break. Like the kids were still kind of tired because they stay up late over break. And you could have counted on it to be kind of, again, low key. Post-COVID, that is no longer the truth. they come back cranked up and then go right into testing. I was in a school the other day where kids were just kind of, it did seem kind of like wandering a bit. And then they kept coming into this office where I was meeting with the administrator being like, you know, is it still second hour? And everyone was literally confused because it was a testing day. And you're like, only certain groups of the kids are testing, but it impacts the schedule of the whole school. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, then there's where my compassion comes in of like, you know, it's hard. Like, it is really important to have a, think about with your own children. It's important to have like a predictable routine. And so, yeah, it is testing season. And well, that throws it off.
Let me frame testing season then a little bit differently as we're coming in for the topic tonight. You all have nothing to worry about right now because nothing's going to change, because here we are 40 years now after A Nation at Risk, our friend Robert Pondicio in the 74 putting out there, you know what, you teachers and the kids, that it's not going to make a darn bit of difference because everything we've been doing up to this time has failed miserably, of which I do agree with him on. And we shouldn't get our expectations up too high right now, because the reality is that he and the people who have been loving A Nation at Risk for 40 years have finally come to the realization that all along, they should have been focused on curriculum, high-quality instructional materials. If they would have just focused 40 years of effort at changing the curriculum, because teachers, you guys just shouldn't be responsible for producing curriculum and teaching materials, because it's obvious that the teaching materials in the curriculum that you guys have been producing over 40 years hasn't done anything. And as we know now during testing week, 40 years after A Nation at Risk, could curriculum reform finally move the needle on academic improvement? That's the premise. That's the paper. Teacher Hallie, I can see tears dropping down your cheeks. You know, Joanna is grabbing a hold. And look at that right away, too. Man, we haven't even got into this. Jim, we got a caller already. Jim from Appleton. All right, Jim, we're going to let you jump in here. I know you're sitting there going like, I want me some high-quality instructional materials. Thank you, Busted Pencils, for bringing this up. Jim, what's happening?
Well, as a school bus driver, I can really relate to the nuts of date coming off from spring break. But what I really wanted to hit you on was the inflation is up. No. Inflation isn't up. The stock dividends are up for all of the stockholders because the corporations made record profits again.
Nice perspective there. Thank you for that shift and that smack upside my head, because I needed it, obviously, to be out there. Johnny's got that look like, yeah, Tim did need a smack, and if I could have reached through the screen, I would have hit him.
First, man, Jim, thanks for driving the bus, man.
Yeah.
Oh, that's important work. I mean, we can't do any of this stuff we're talking about without all the folks that come together to make public education and education possible. So love what you do, Jim, and thanks for it. And yeah, man, the kids aren't coming back from break sedated at all. There was, you know, a lot of energy coming out of the gates this week, you know. And Tim, I'm following what you're laying down. But
okay,
man,
yeah, I was gonna say, put it out there, right? It's like, whoa, wait, really again?
No more high quality instructional materials. Yeah, like great. That sounds awesome, but it's not true. It's usually because that whole report, and I lost. I'm sorry, Tim. I got a little snoozed off during it because I was like, man, I'm so many years into hearing here's the best quality instructional materials. And I look at it and it's like maybe a different color cover on the book that's really expensive and not what I need in my classroom. Not what I need as a teacher to do my job better. I know this stuff. I have things that I need. It's like a wish list, and none of it comes through that high quality instructional material stuff that you're talking about. And I'm not saying you're talking about, you're reading about.
I'm reading about it. And I want to read a little bit here, and then we're going to jump in with Teacher Hallie and quote. This is right out of the middle of the article. There is one arrow in the policymaker's quiver. Sounds to me like he had AI write that. In the quiver that remains mostly unutilized and can be used to affect positive change. curriculum reform, the adoption and implementation of high quality instructional materials, that would be HQIMs, and making curriculum and its implementation central to school improvement efforts, contribute to working conditions that allow teachers to focus on lesson delivery, not design. Because we know you teachers who went to school for years to become professionals in curriculum instruction, you don't really have the expertise to be messing around with curriculum. Leave that to the professionals who produce HQIMs, high quality instructional materials. Johnny, I will say, in all my years of preparing teachers, I feel like I've let them down because I never once introduced my future teachers to high quality instructional materials. Teacher Hallie, I'm sorry if I steered you the wrong way when you were becoming a teacher.
I'll be honest. I read this and I was like, what is this gobbledygook? Like, I mean, on one hand, it's tough. It was hard to read. Mm-hmm. Like, my biggest thing reading it was, if I try to think about if someone was reading this, would they be like, oh, this makes sense? Mm-hmm. But then I was like, then I know if you think it makes sense, you've never been in a classroom before. You've never taught, you know, because as I'm reading it, I'm like, this is what we do. And I'm also like, curriculum is not the problem. You know, like, I don't know. It really was an awful article, and it's concerning for me to think that people believe it.
It's concerning, and I'd say this, because actually this carries a lot of weight in the reform movement. This is, you know, their inability to let go of what they started 40 years ago. I mean, here it is. This is counterattack again, high-quality instructional materials, and this is the bad teacher narrative. But, you know, hey, look, wait, how can you argue with, he quotes a research that says comprehensive, content-rich curriculum is a common feature of academically high-performing countries. You know, so in those countries where they do good testing, they have high quality instructional materials, Teacher Joanna.
Well, that, when you were reading the initial piece, that's what I was thinking. I'm like, oh my gosh, I know we want to talk about this maybe for the show, but I'm like, this is quick, because it's like, they just need instructional materials to match their guaranteed testing contracts. That's all it was saying. That's all it was saying, is like, we've got the market on, we've got the testing contracts. Now we need the curriculum, and I'm doing the air quotes, to match up with it, to really, you know, and it has nothing to do with teaching or learning, and everything to do with marketing and sales.
There it is. I was going to say, Tim, you use the sarcasm, so I have to follow, because I don't always detect the sarcasm. But then I was like, oh, yeah, Tim's using sarcasm. That's that thing. But I was saying, because Tim, otherwise, man, I just, like, three lines in, I was like, I was waiting for the line that says, and I have a timeshare in Vegas for you to buy and swamp land. And like, as a teacher, like, if you read these things and we're like, okay, what are you selling? And probably my superintendent or principal's buying it. So let me just get to the point of like, where it's at. It's not what we need. It's not what we want, but it's a long-winded sales ad. It's like the weird drug commercials that come on during
Before my break, for all of us, yes, this sounds like selling us bad condos. For my neighbor, wait. Oh, this sounds like the solution. I want to poke some more holes, though. 40 years, nation at risk. My goodness, they will not go away. Education reformers. Look, if you're a reformer, give us a call. Busted Pencils, back after the break.
Busted Pencils is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday evenings at 6 p.m. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media's programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Nightlight with Peach Schwabe.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute and a couple quick tips about how to save on gas. Now, our warm-up tip is that modern cars don't actually need to warm up. Now, I remember feeling pretty smart when I let my 73 Buick Regal run for about 10 minutes before I would head out in the morning. Truth is, if your car was built in the last 30 years, the engine does not need more than 30 seconds to fully warm up. The rest of that time is just you burning money. My main tip today, though, is this. Don't spring for the premium gas. Unless your car specifically calls for high-octane gas, and there will be a note by the gas tank if it does, it's probably just a waste of your money. Now, you might need the 90 to go from Janesville to Madison, but you don't need it in your tank. Putting anything higher than 87 octane in your car is just pouring money down the drain. Get the cheaper stuff. You can feel good about your wallet and your engine. This has been your Work Money Minute. Go to workmoney.org for more tips on how to save. Take good care.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to Civic Media Spotlight. We now head to the Todd Alba Show for a Crossover Wednesday segment with Pat Kreitlow, where they discuss the news coming out of Arizona this week.
Welcome back to the Todd Alba Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is now 20 minutes past the hour of 12 noon on Wednesday, April 10th. Crossover day here. Always a pleasure to welcome our colleague, host of Up North News Radio, every morning from 6 until 8, Pat Kreitlow on a Wednesday. Pat, talking about this decision from the Arizona Supreme Court yesterday, which is essentially banned abortions in Arizona, and talking about how it kind of ties together with the overall election this fall. And if the audience will stay with me for a minute, we'll tie it all together. But I want to play this cut. Perhaps you have. I know J. Matt Nair, I believe, has as well. This is the New York director for Robert Fitzgerald Kennedy Jr.'s campaign in New York, caught on video, caught on tape at some campaign meeting. And she is laying out what this third party run from RFK Jr. is really about. We'll listen to it, discuss it on the other side. Here is the New York director for Robert Fitzgerald Kennedy.
So there's no Biden voters in the House, right? No. Okay, good. Things, I guess, will change over time because you do have to only pick one candidate at the end of the day. But the Kennedy voter and the Trump voter, the enemy, our mutual enemy is Biden. Since Biden is counting on us with Bobby in the mix, my thought is for the Republicans. See, Bobby right now, he's pulling from both sides. Right now, he's actually pulling a little bit more from Biden, which explains why the DNC is kind of ganging up on him. They have a special committee to go after independent candidates. Yeah, they say independent candidates, like non-affiliated candidates, they really mean Bobby, because Bobby's the only third party that anybody's taking seriously. So they developed a committee just to go after him and to get him off of the ballot in any way they can, especially it seems as though they're going after the battleground states more than the deep blue states. Bobby's moving the blues on his own. If the Republicans just accepted the fact that New York, Maryland, Chicago, Illinois, California, New Jersey, Connecticut, most of the Northeast is going to go blue, why wouldn't we put our vote to Bobby and at least get rid of Biden and get those 28 electoral votes in New York? The card's a little wrong. It says 26 electoral votes. Give those 28 electoral votes to Bobby rather than to Biden, thereby reducing Biden's 270. And we all know how that works, right? 270 wins the election. If you don't get to 270, if nobody gets to 270, then Congress picks the president. So who are they going to pick? Who are they going to pick? If it's a Republican Congress, they'll pick Trump. So
there you go. Laying it out, the New York director for Robert Fitzgerald Kennedy Jr.'s campaign. They're saying the quiet part out loud, Pat Kreitlow. First, it was No Labels. It collapsed because they couldn't find a candidate. And of course, No Labels was all about getting Trump elected. Now we hear it straight from the horse's mouth, so to speak. Kennedy is the same deal.
All I want to do is acknowledge that some people have to play, you know, the nice guy. I don't know if good cop, bad cop is the right way to frame this anymore, but somebody's going to be the nice guy. I am not going to be the nice guy on this topic from now till November, because I have lived through 2000 when it was, oh, Ralph Nader needs my vote because, you know, it'll make a statement. 2016. Oh, Hillary just hasn't earned my vote. I just don't know. So I'm going to stay home, or I'm going to vote for Jill Stein. Now we're looking at this again. I'm going to be the bad guy. Stop it. Stop it. The choice is between somebody who you may not agree with, but is getting things done and kind of wants to protect American democracy, versus somebody who's promising to be a dictator on day one and all of the things that come into it. And your innocent little vote for Robert Kennedy or Jill Stein or whoever else is on the ballot, it's not innocent anymore. You're now complicit in the continued attacks on American democracy. and the harm that it causes to people. Anybody thinking third party right now, better put yourself in somebody like Liz Cheney's shoes. Do you think Liz Cheney is eager to vote for Joe Biden? No, but compared to what the alternative is, she's doing the right thing for America. And that's what we need more people to do, is make a choice for America. It means you're not going to get, Liz Cheney's not going to get her dream idea of a president this time, nor are Robert Kennedy supporters, unless secretly you're a Trump supporter. And that seems to be the case in this campaign.
Well said, Pat Kreitlow, former state senator on the Democratic side for the state of Wisconsin. But don't just take it from him. How about a speechwriter for former Democratic President Barack Obama? Here's John Lovett on his podcast from Crooked Media, podcaster extraordinaire. John Lovett on what it means to vote this fall.
We all collectively have a choice about whether or not we want someone who is going to fight to make the country better or someone who's going to make it much worse, someone who's going to try to enshrine Roe into law, or someone who's going to try to pass a national abortion ban, someone who is going to go after trans people and gender-affirming care, or someone who's going to try to protect it at the federal level, someone who believes in democracy or someone who doesn't. Voting is not some grand statement of human identity. It is not the defining character trait that proves who you are or what you believe. It is an opportunity to use a lever of power to make the country better or to make the country worse. We will have a choice in November. On climate, for example, I don't think that there is a bigger choice facing a democracy on Earth, probably in the next decade, than whether or not we elect a Democrat for the climate on planet Earth. I don't think that there's a bigger choice. I think every climate activist in the country, whatever their legitimate gripes are with Joe Biden's embrace of kind of an all of the above strategy, of his failure to do a host of different things, whatever the valid criticisms may be, every person who believes that we have to tackle climate change ought to be doing everything they can to elect Joe Biden in November. And you can do that across virtually every single issue.
Come on, man. You follow me with John Lovett. I mean, that's like, hey, Pat, let's go to the batting cage. Hey, you did good. Christian Yelich, you come on over here. You give it a shot.
I actually think your case was made stronger if you want to know the truth. I just wanted to play for people what someone, not just who's been a state senator on the Democratic side yourself, but also somebody who's written speeches and knows Barack Obama very well and is a leading Democrat nationally. Look, Pat, I am empathetic towards people in Wisconsin who have very deep concerns about what's happening with Palestinians and in Gaza right now. I've called that out. I've called out the loss of life. I get that as much as I can. What I don't understand is why you would stay home if you're a voter out of protest for something, one issue that you don't like about Joe Biden, knowing that what we saw in Arizona yesterday could visit all of us after November if we stay home and protest. I don't get that. Can you explain it as a Democrat?
Right now, your single issue, whatever that may be, if you're on the left of center side, whatever that may be, it may be climate, it may be U.S. policy toward Palestinians and Israel, whatever that single issue is, it's not the most important thing. It's not the most important reason for you to vote when there is an existential threat to our government, to our democracy, to how we are able to conduct our lives in the United States as free people. Mm-hmm. So I didn't say it the last time around, but yeah, whether it's the Middle East or any other single issue, you're going to have to set that aside, not all the way, but just to say, you know what, there is a larger mission here that we've got to fulfill. Then, like Liz Cheney, we can go back to fighting about the things that we actually all want to be fighting about in a normal America. This is not normal. Stop normalizing the threat that Donald Trump poses.
Pat Kreitlow, always a pleasure. You can listen to him each and every morning, Monday through Friday, 6 until 8, Up North News Radio. Pat, thank you so much. Have a great day. Talk to you next Wednesday.
You bet. See ya.
Thank you very much. Stay tuned. More on the other side, including your phone calls. 855-752-4842 is the All Ball Show for a Wednesday on Civic Media.
The Todd Alba Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from noon till 2. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. This is Civic Media.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark.
The fate of the $95 billion foreign aid package the House passed on Saturday now lies with the Senate. The Republican chair of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, Michael McCaul of Texas, tells ABC's This Week it was an important step for Congress.
The eyes of the world are watching, and our adversaries are watching, and history is watching. And that's what I kept telling my colleagues. Do you want to be a Chamberlain or a Churchill? Because that is a moment in time that we are at.
It includes $61 billion in aid for Ukraine, $26 billion for Israel. Today, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said he would fight any effort to sanction the Israeli military as the State Department weighs possible sanctions against IDF units that are accused of civil rights violations. Opening statements in former President Trump's criminal hush money trial begin tomorrow in New York. He has pleaded not guilty. This is ABC News.
St. Louis. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Milwaukee with 18 hits against the Cardinals yesterday. Home runs for Bryce Terang, Reese Hoskins, Jackson Churio, Valley Sports Wisconsin.
Now Churio tries right field. Walker back again. That's gone! Back to back go the Brewers. Jackson Churio hits number four. On a 1-2 pitch, Churio goes the other way.
They have definitely figured out something.
The Brewers with a 12-5 win over the Cardinals. Reese Hoskins.
You know, I think we wanted to come out and try to punch first. William getting us going, getting a guy on. You know, the hitters to get pitches in the middle of the zone is pressure on the base pass. So let's say pressure on the
Civic
base pass
media.
Gets the hitters good pitches, and we didn't miss today.
NBA, the Bucks held practices preparing to host the Pacers. Game one of their playoff series begins tonight.
I thought it was a good week. Great preparation. Thought we got some decent conditioning in. Yeah, I thought it was a good week.
That's Bucks head coach Doc Rivers. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Frigid conditions early. We'll see sunny to mostly sunny skies and breezy west to northwest winds with highs in the mid and upper 50s. In the overnight, quite chilly once again with mostly clear skies. Lows bottoming out in the upper 20s to lower 30s. It's 57 at our studios.
It's a polka party, and for good reason. 30 years ago, legislation making the polka our state dance became official in Pulaski.
I think everybody in Pulaski showed up in Zielinski Hall or on the streets because it was a polka day celebration.
That's then-Governor Tommy Thompson who signed the legislation in April 1994. But do you know who got the barrel rolling on the idea in the first place? The Wisconsin Polka Boosters, a class of second graders, or the State Folk Museum? The answer coming up.
It's tradition. It's culture. It's food. It's beer. You know, heritage.
Heritage back to the 1840s when the polka became popular with Europeans and came to America with them. So who started the Make Polka Our State Dance movement? A class of Madison second graders, but the Boosters and Folk Museum supported those efforts. It's a cultural slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
How was your drive to school?
Let me tell you, I had to get my iced coffee first. I just can't seem to put it down. My favorite rapper just announced a tour. My phone was buzzing like crazy. I'm so excited. I had to text all my friends right then to talk about it. Then someone started calling me and...
Let's try that again.
I turned my phone off right away. I never drive distracted.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Busted Pencils with Dr. Tim and Dr. Johnny.
I wonder what Matt Damon's mom would say when it comes to teaching science to little kids.
Wait, what? You want to know what my mom would say? All right, well, just ask her.
And there she is, Dr. Nancy Carlson Page. Welcome to Busted Pencils. Nancy, how are you?
Hey, I'm great. It's great to see you. It's great to be here.
Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Weeknights at 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Todd Albaugh.
Join us next time live from Governor Nelson State Park as we talk to Tia Nelson, the daughter of the late, great Governor of Wisconsin who created Earth Day right here.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Up next on this weekend's edition of Civic Media Spotlight, we head to Matinair On Air, where Jane and Greg were joined by retired Brigadier General Steve Anderson to discuss the importance of NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization.
Nailed it.
Good morning and welcome to Matinair On Air. Thank you so very, very much for joining us. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, Calvin on the board, coming to you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can join the show. Call, text 855-75-CIVIC or leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Very excited to have our guest join us again. You were here a couple of months ago, and it was such an interesting discussion, and it's gotten a lot of traction on our social media accounts, and I think it's really important information, which is why we wanted to have you back. Retired Brigadier General Steve Anderson is joining us. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you so much for having me on again. It's a real pleasure to be here.
It's such an important conversation, Steve. And for people who didn't hear you the first time around, if you wouldn't mind just sharing a little bit of your background and your experience in the military. Sure.
Absolutely. Well, I'm a 31-year Army guy, and I've proud to serve in Iraq and Afghanistan, Korea, Germany. I've served in NATO environment multiple times, and I was proud to have been the senior logistician, the senior logistics officer for General David Petraeus in 2006 and 7 during the, you may recall, the 5-brigade surge when we were trying to bring more troops very rapidly over to Iraq, and I was very, very proud to have been part of that mission. And I've been retired now for about, hard to believe, 15 years, but I've been a businessman. I've done a number of things. And one of the things I do, by the way, is I work with a group of fellow retired senior leaders in the government called National Security Leaders for America. And we're trying to essentially we've got over 700 members they call ourselves members, and we're essentially trying to do everything we can to oppose Donald Trump and his presidency.
Which I'm sure is shocking to some folks to think that so many members of the military and former members of the military are coming out against their former commander in chief. But so this brings us to NATO and the importance of NATO, and we're going to get to Ukraine also, because there's been some Looney Tunes stuff being said from certain members of the Republican Party about Ukraine and why they should not be getting any aid. But in your firsthand experience, Steve, why do we need NATO? Why is this important?
NATO is the most important and probably the most successful collective security agreement in world history. It has driven over the last 77 years an incredible amount of economic stability and political stability in the United States and NATO. And it's not an understatement to say that much of the things that we enjoy today in the United States came as a direct result of our NATO alliance. They allowed us to win the Cold War. They kept us from being escalating the Cold War into a nuclear confrontation. The cultural ties, the political ties, the economic ties with Europe have been so vital to our success as a nation and our prosperity as people that live here. And it just can't be overstated. And so NATO, I mean, the thought of even leaving NATO, of not supporting NATO as strong as we have, is just preposterous. And we've got to continue to support NATO because they're so key to our, like I said, to our economic well-being.
We are a global world now. Everything is interconnected. It's like the environment. It's all a part of a piece. And Donald Trump has said that he wanted to withdraw from NATO. And if they are not paying their dues, then Russia should just go in and attack them. That seems like a bad idea.
It's ridiculous. I mean, he's treating the NATO alliance as a membership at one of his golf clubs, that if you don't pay your dues, you get kicked out of the club. That's not how it works, you know, in national security. And first of all, there are no dues. OK, the requirement or the objective is for NATO participating alliance countries, which are 32 now since Finland and Sweden just recently joined, is the requirement is to develop or to provide 2% of your gross national product to national defense, to invest in your own national defense, essentially. Now, that's what it is. And, you know, and of course, some of the people have struggled, some of the member countries, a number of small of them have struggled to meet that, you know, but 2% is, I mean, the vast majority of members of NATO alliance provide more of their GNP to national defense than does the United States. You know, but you know, difficulty in meeting that requirement doesn't mean that they aren't continuing to support everything the United States is trying to get out of that alliance. And don't forget, NATO was there for us for 9/11. Okay, the only time that Article 5 has ever been invoked, and of course that's the attack on one is the attack on all clause. The only time that has ever been invoked has been Europe and NATO's support of the United States. They went to Afghanistan because of 9/11. They went to Iraq because of 9/11. They lost thousands of their own flesh and blood as casualties in places like Iraq and Afghanistan. Why? Because they were loyal to the NATO alliance and because they wanted to support the United States. There's just no better alliance and no better friends that we have in the entire world than our NATO partners.
If you're just joining us, our guest is retired Brigadier General Steve Anderson, and we're talking about the importance of NATO and if the United States, Steve, would withdraw from NATO, who would be happy?
Of course, Vladimir Putin. I mean, you know. And probably Putin's puppet, Donald Trump himself, you know, and unfortunately, a number of GOP whack jobs that have aligned with themselves. And believe me, Jane, it is very painful for me to say this because I'm a lifelong Republican. I am a Ronald Reagan, George Bush 1 and 2, you know, Mitt Romney, Bob Dole. I'm always been a Republican, okay? And you know, but in the military, we try to be apolitical. We try not to get involved in politics, not to show. And I can tell you, in 31 years of Army, I didn't know what my bosses, who they voted for, or who they supported, even. I mean, that's just how apolitical the military is. But all of that, from my mind, changed on the 6th of January, 2021, when we saw the radicalization of the military and we saw an overthrow of the United States, you know, and we had a president that refused to accept the results, you know, and to contribute to a peaceful transition of power. All of that changed. And I felt that it was time to start speaking out about what was going on. And so I'm proud to say that over 700 senior leaders of the government, ambassadors, general officers, you know, admirals, et cetera, have signed on with us, and we're trying to do, like I said, everything we can to ensure that Donald Trump is never elected president again.
Sir, we've had in the past few weeks, we've had some individuals, they are Republican voters who have gone on the record to say they're not going to vote for Trump. And one of the things that we've discussed on this show is how to have that conversation. And I imagine that with your CV and your outreach, you're having these conversations with regular folks who are saying, I love Donald Trump, or the election was stolen, or why do we need NATO? It's not a group we need to be a part of anyways. We're America. How do you approach a conversation like that, being a Republican too, where you might be saying, oh my gosh, I can't believe we're in the quote unquote same party? How do you approach those discussions? Because that's something I know that we all struggle with, to just sit down and not get immediately mad, to actually try to communicate.
Well, that's the $1 million question. That's so hard. Why our nation is so polarized is because each of us tends to go to our own news sources and our own little microcosm of what we want to hear, and we don't listen to each other. You know, and so what we're trying to do is, by, you know, because we have been apolitical historically, we're hoping that that can resonate with common Americans and say, hey, these are military guys. They're not in it for themselves. They're not in it for power or anything like that. They're in it because they care about America. They're in it because they care about what happens to this country. And so we're hoping that that can help break down some of the barriers you just mentioned that are out there. You know, I mean, most of this is driven by ignorance. They just don't understand how important NATO is. They haven't been taught, they haven't learned, they haven't retained whatever, and they haven't been reminded how critical NATO has been to over the last 77 years of prosperity in the United States, in the entire world, how critical it's been to our development. So we try to educate people, say, just remember, you know, that this has been extremely important. This has created an atmosphere in which we've been able to economically prosper in a way that no one could ever imagine 77 years ago. And oh, by the way, they went to bat for us after 9/11. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's not forget that. And people tend to do that. People unfortunately forget that 15 years ago, the United States was spending $300 million a day on the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. $300 million a day. You know, so people talk about supporting Ukraine is too expensive. Hey, look, I mean, supporting Ukraine, that's an existential threat to our nation. It's an existential threat to world, you know, peace and security. Iraq and Afghanistan was never really in that lake, in my opinion. Sure, they were a breeding ground for terrorists, but they were not that kind of a threat where they could actually take down the United States. Different story in Ukraine, where you're talking about an adversary like Russia that has nuclear weapons, hundreds of them, pointed to the United States right now.
We're talking to retired Brigadier General Steve Anderson about the importance of NATO and also the importance of the U.S. continued support for Ukraine. Republican Representative Mike Turner on Sunday said that Russian propaganda has taken hold among some of his House Republican colleagues and is even being uttered on the House floor. Calvin, I believe we have a clip from Republican Representative Mike Turner. Let's play that.
Congressman McCaul made a comment this week about what he says sounds like Russian propaganda from some conservative media and why it's so difficult to explain to Republican voters why supporting Ukraine is important. He told Julia Yaffe, quote, "I think Russian propaganda has made its way into the United States, unfortunately, and it's infected a good chunk of my party's base." He singled out primetime shows on conservative channels. Do you agree with him? And how big is this problem?
Oh, it is absolutely true. We see directly coming from Russia attempts to mask communications that are anti-Ukraine and pro-Russia messages, some of which we even hear being uttered on the House floor.
Mike Turner talking to CNN's Jake Tapper about Russian disinformation now pretty much infecting a portion of the Republican Party. Our very own Ron Johnson, Steve, had said Putin's going to win. So what, you know, I guess we just give it to him.
It's insane. It's insane. I mean, Ron Johnson is just, I don't know. It's hard to politely describe him in any other any way other than
you don't have to.
Yeah.
Still
he's a moron. Let's get down to it. He's just a moron. You know, but all these guys, they get their news. They're taking their news from, you know, these sources. And it is Russian propaganda. I totally agree with that. I've been on Jake Tapper's show a couple of times. And Mike McCall's spot on. I mean, you know, they're hearing what they want to hear, and they're essentially taking their orders from, you know, from the, you know, the bronze god himself, Donald Trump. And, you know, and they're essentially speaking things that they think will appeal to him. But, you know, any true Republican like myself, you know, unfortunately, I'm proud to call myself a rhino now, you know, Republican in name only, because I simply can't associate myself with the present group of Republicans. But any true Republican supports strong national defense and has historically been opposed to Russia and their territorial gains, and would have, you know, and wants to support Ukraine and people, peace loving people like Ukraine, that they're fighting not for themselves. They're fighting for all of us. And people, we absolutely need to understand that.
We're going to go to a real quick break. When we return, retired Brigadier General Steve Anderson will still be with us. If you have a question, feel free to text it in at 855-75-CIVIC. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Matt Nair on Air is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday mornings from 10 till noon. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute. An emergency fund is a special kind of savings you set aside for emergencies and emergencies only. Who should have one? Everybody. And why should you have one? In a word, security. Did you know that today, more than half of the adults in America, 147 million of us, can't even afford a $1,000 emergency? I recommend socking away at least $1,000 and eventually building up to 3 to 6 months of household expenses. You want to keep your emergency fund somewhere easy to access, like a savings account, and not in the stock market, thank you very much. Look, we can't avoid bad things happening, but we can work to make sure that when that never gonna happen to me thing does happen to one of us, we are as financially prepared as we can be. That's today's Work Money Minute. For more everyday money help, check out Work Money Media on YouTube or text MONEY to 88285. That's MONEY to 88285. Till next time, take good care.
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Allball Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
We round out this hour of Civic Media Spotlight with a conversation from Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow, where Pat was joined by Congressman Mark Pocan to discuss what's going on in Washington.
Maren Morris, one of today's birthdays. You can catch it in our history lesson every morning about 6:50. Congressman Mark Pocan, who joins us this morning now. Congressman, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Pat. Well, thank you.
In terms of trying to get things done, I mean, we have been talking now for more than 6 months about an aid package to Israel, an aid package to Ukraine, perhaps help to Taiwan, perhaps something for the southern border and other worthy things. And yet it keeps getting caught up in these threats of government shutdowns, in Republicans rebelling against their own speaker, and of course the course of the war between Israel and Hamas in Gaza has certainly put the whole notion of aid package in a different light. Is there any way to give you that question as to where are we overall in moving some kind of aid packages to any of these particular hotspots?
Yeah, I think the one that I think most members of Congress, probably three quarters of Congress, would vote for would be the Ukraine package, if it were able to get to the floor. Because of the way they changed the rules on the Republican side, it's much harder to get to the floor. But we've got to figure out how to do that. I think there is at least half of the Republicans and virtually every single Democrat, including myself, would support that. I think the Israel funding is much more complicated. Benjamin Netanyahu, almost on a daily basis, is proving that his interests are not the U.S. interests. Benjamin Netanyahu has been an irresponsible host of those funds and not using them well. So I think we have to put some conditions to protect innocent lives of kids, in particular in Gaza and Israel, for that matter. I mean, if this broadens, we get brought into it. And I think Netanyahu right now is just making a lot of assumptions. And then the humanitarian aid, for whatever reason, the Republicans don't believe in right now. And that's kind of crazy, because that's something that I think is a hallmark of what the United States is about. So we may have to break these into some pieces to finally get it done, or at least have some assurances from the White House on conditions. But there's a movement on the ground in Wisconsin, Pat. I mean, I did 4 town halls and a couple other meetings in my district when I was home for 2 weeks, or rarely, as you know, home for 2 weeks in a row. I was in my most rural parts of my district, not Madison. I think the closest I got was Mazomanie, Wisconsin, which is not, you know, exactly Madison. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the thing people wanted to talk about the most in these town halls was Ukraine and Gaza. And, you know, Ukraine, they want to get it done. Gaza, they're really concerned about the direction.
It bears stating again that you can want compassion and humanitarian aid for the Palestinian people, but not be pro-Hamas. And similarly in Israel, you can be disagreeable or downright disgusted with what the Netanyahu government is doing. That does not make you anti-Semitic or anti-Israel. And the fact of the matter is, that pivotal moment when Israel attacked those humanitarian workers with World Central Kitchen, that was a real pivot point for a lot of people in helping them understand that while they want to see humanitarian aid. They want to see, you know, minimize death. They do want to see the defeat of terrorism. But there's something terribly wrong when humanitarian workers are purposefully targeted, as it appears.
Yeah, over 200 aid workers have been killed, and that's part of the problem. We can't get food and water to people, not only because Israel won't let it through its borders, so we're dropping it from the air and sometimes killing people doing that and trying to bring it in from water, which is, again, ridiculous that we can't do it in a more safe and efficient way. But if the people who distribute it are also being killed and we can't get distributed, then you still have starvation.
You know, people look at what Congress might do with that aid package. And then again, for Ukraine, which desperately needs it as well. It comes back to, you know, the still new House Speaker, Mike Johnson, and trying to get a read on him. He keeps saying kind of the right things, like we're going to get something done for Ukraine, but you're still not really seeing it in his actions. And I honestly can't tell how much of it to put on him for his leadership skills or lack thereof versus he wants to do something good, but the extreme members in his caucus won't let him. What kind of a read do you get on the speaker these days?
It's a combination. I mean, their caucus with the small margin is completely dysfunctional, and that's why we only do censure resolutions, impeachments, you know, things like that. We can't actually pass laws that we've been sent here to do. But also, Johnson is very inexperienced, and I've been told by Republicans that he's trying to please everyone in his caucus. And if you look at that caucus, you can't. I mean, you know, if you went to the Adams family set, you know, Cousin It and Morticia and you know, Herman all might be a little different in trying to please. And that's what it's like with the Republican caucus right now. And he hasn't quite understood that yet.
So we look at what's there now and we look at what might be there after November. And we've mentioned Congressman Gallagher is stepping down and in the 8th CD. The 8th Congressional District, we know that obviously Kristen Lierley got in the race on the Democratic side late last week. There were a former state senator, Roger Roth, former state Senate president, and a current senator, Andre Jacques, already in the race when seemingly out of nowhere, out of left field, comes this former gas station owner, Tony Weed, and comes in immediately with the Trump endorsement. And so I just ask you, as an outsider looking at that district, Is it in play for Democrats to pick up, especially if this primary becomes especially bruising? Or did Trump just make the primary almost a non-event and this Tony Weed guy is going to stroll right in? What's your prognostication on that?
Man, we got to see. I mean, I don't predict Republican primaries these days. It's difficult. We have an exceptionally strong candidate in the 8th district, but the numbers aren't as good as, say, the 3rd or the 1st, right? Democrat-Republican splits. But, you know, this is definitely an interesting curveball thrown in with Donald Trump getting involved before a candidate's even announced. Someone like Roger Roth, I agree with you. Someone just call him a rhino is, like, very interesting, certainly not by our standards. And, you know, Andre Jacques, the same lane that he's trying to have is where this new candidate's at. So who knows what will happen? I just know that, you know, I think we're going to have a very serious candidate coming to the first very, very soon. The third district has several folks that are vying for the primary against the most damaged member of our delegation, Derek Van Orden. You know, Wisconsin is going to be ground central with the U.S. Senate with Tammy Baldwin's seat. Obviously, the president has to win it. And we have new legislative maps.
And didn't you find it interesting that, again, President Biden was here in Wisconsin just 2 days ago, his 10th trip overall as president. And yet when Donald Trump finally came to Wisconsin, to Green Bay last week, it was on Election Day and quite possibly cost conservatives the majority because some of the Green Bay City Council members, you know, lost by a handful of votes. It just goes to show that, yeah, Wisconsin's going to get attention, but you got to give it good attention. It's got to be productive. And are they taking Wisconsin more seriously than maybe they did in cycles past?
Oh, absolutely. I remind them of the Hillary campaign over and over that she never showed up. And we all warned them this time. We're trying to make sure we're in their ear on a regular basis. But, you know, Joe Biden's come to Wisconsin so often. I was kidding that you asked the governor what the residency requirements are. He might owe some taxes, you know.
Congressman Mark Pocan, thank you so much for making some time for us. Hope you have a great day out there.
Yeah, thank you, Pat. Take care.
Up North News Radio with The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. Pat Kreidlow.
Monday morning, Selena Heller on the Birds migrating back to Wisconsin, and the Milwaukee Bucks begin their playoff series with Indiana.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6.
When you try Grandpa's barbecue, will it be sweet? No. Fiery hot. fruity, or honey-flavored? We think not. Instead, Grandpa's Barbecue is the true original flavor of barbecue. Without the hype, the additives, or the hoopla. Because this is a family recipe that's handed down by Grandpa himself. Grandpa's Barbecue. Available in select stores and online at grandpasbarbecueshop.com.
This is the Buzz of the North, WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.